It is Thursday, the 13th of March, and this is episode 200 of Digital Outbox. Oh, yes, a monumental milestone has been achieved. We have talked at you 200 times, or will have done by the end of this podcast. I'm Chris, joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Evening, Chris. Was that a French didgeridoo?
I think it might have been. And we are blessed again with the dulcet tones of Henri. Hello, Henri.
Et bonjour, bonsoir, mes amis, or something like that. I do like the way that there hasn't been no expense spared whatsoever for the sound effects for this particular
fanfare.
Podcast.
It was very expensive sound effect, that. Maybe we'll bring it in again later. Anyway, congratulations all round, 200.
Well done, everybody. Good
well
job.
Done, pat on back.
Good job.
Shaq didn't want to come back.
I did ask. I just say, what are you doing Thursday night? I'm busy.
I'm washing my hair.
Oh, he's bald.
Exactly.
That's how you knew he was on the wind-up.
Exactly.
I did tell him a laugh through the week. He was slagging somebody off about their lack of hair. And I was like, Shaq, you look like Duncan Goodhue. How can you slag off somebody's hair?
Never let anything like that stop you. Okay, so what have we got for you in this 200th episode? Well, we're going to start with a story we talked about last week, which was Mount Gox. I don't know how it's said, but this is the Bitcoin. What's that, sorry?
Must be Mount Gox.
Okay.
If it's not, we're going to decide it.
Yeah, okay, there we go. It's decided. The Bitcoin exchange that the owner said went bankrupt. There has been more developments this week. Basically, we're not so sure that the owner's not just defrauding people. Ian, what's been going on?
Basically, they were hacked, and information was leaked on, I think it was it Reddit? Yeah, it was leaked on Reddit. And basically, it looks like they've not lost them. They've been basically stealing the Bitcoins themselves.
Yeah, it's funny that.
Yeah, I think you said in last week that there'd been sort of rumblings that this exchange wasn't necessarily the most robust place in the world. You know, but then there's no saying this is actually true story either. So the hackers have sort of put this supposed data dump out there saying that these guys still do have these coins. And as part of that process of putting the data out there, they also happened to accidentally leak another bit of malware which is designed to steal your own Bitcoin. So it's all a bit kind of incestual, really. Do you have any Bitcoins, Henry?
No, I don't. But of course, I may well have kept them in one of these exchanges, which is, of course, the worst place possible to keep one. I mean, after all, they are just a number, aren't they? And I do like what the Winklevoss twins, who have a huge investment in Bitcoins, apparently they've printed all theirs out and keep them in a safe,
right?
As you would with any, because, you know, and that really is probably as safe as you can.
How do you print them out?
To keep them.
Aren't they just numbers? I guess
it's just a number. It's just a very long number.
Can I print out a few numbers and put them in a vault?
No,
does that work? I'm not sure. I mean, to be honest, that's all money is, isn't it? It's just, you know, pieces of paper with number on it. So that's all it really is. Anyway, as I said last week, I think we'll see many, many more stories deriding and undermining the Bitcoin empire that we're seeing at the moment. So this is just step one, I think. Also, Berners-Lee's been on the phone again. Rang up Timmy. He rang up Digital Outbox and said, "Digital Outbox, this is what we need. We need."
Yeah, well, that's good. I wonder where he got your number. I'm glad it was Digital Outbox and not just you personally.
He Skyped us on Digital Outbox.
Much better.
So basically, he's come out this week and said that we need a Magna Carta for the online world. He's pretty much said, I can see that governments are having their two pennies worth and they're trying to restrict everything down at the moment. And really, we need to, as users of the internet, come together and make rules and regulations that for the digital world that we want to live in. I think the horse might have bolted.
Yeah, I think he's about 25 years too late, actually. But good on him for speaking up.
Well, I mean, it's good to have someone of his what's his stature, status, talking up. I mean, but as I said, I think it might be a little bit too late. I think he's definitely sort of you've seen the direction of it. But I think, unfortunately, I don't think there's any power we've got left to protect the rights on the digital world.
No, and I think most people read it and thought, yep, you're right, it's never going to happen. And yes. maybe I'm just being very cynical, but big business is involved. Companies are never going to sign up to this.
It's too much riding on it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, there was lots of talk about, I've not got it in the show notes, but I'm sure he actually referenced things like, you know, Facebook, I mean, rode on the back of a free and open web, and kind of that's how they kind of started, and started for nothing. Mm. But they did everything in their power to make sure that everything was in their own, you know, enclave, and give it to themselves so they can monetize it. And that's why companies, and I mean, to a certain extent, Google does the same, although they say they're open, there's an awful lot that isn't. All the big companies are not going to sign up to this.
Do you think the kind of the startings of the internet before like government got involved and all that, do you think that was a bit like the hippie communes, basically? You know, it's just really nice vision and stuff, but actually the reality of our world that we live in means that could never happen.
Well, I mean, I think when it was basically in an academic, in the academic world, I mean, the whole basis of academia is, you know, peer review, and, you know, the data is free. And it is there out there for debate, and what really matters is what you're looking for is kudos and reputation, mm-hmm. and you're not necessarily really looking to monetize that. And so, coming from that environment, then you can understand how the internet did kind of grow up in a kind of free way. Nowadays, of course, you know, as you said, I mean, it is big business that's involved, you know, they've just worked out that actually this data that we have for, you know, 25 years just been not very, very, very casual with, actually, all our personal information is actually worth something in aggregate form. And, you know, they are going to make the most of it. And yeah, I think you're quite right. It's far too late to go back and change that.
I think also it wouldn't be as mature as it is now if we hadn't had the influence of big business over the years. There are certain things have happened that, you know, if you look at the likes of Google, you know, there's a lot of what they do we take for granted. Mm-hmm. And if they hadn't, you know, monetized in certain ways, either by adverts or somebody else hadn't done it, if it wasn't for Google, somebody else would have came along and done the same. But
Alta Vista didn't do it. Do you remember Alta Vista?
Yeah, I know. But even then, I think there was such a... Although they said they indexed a lot of the web, they didn't. I mean, there was so much that they didn't do. You just assumed, well, this is my web. And Google's the same. I mean, Google's only a small percentage as well. But it's such a complex beast now. You know, I was just sitting here thinking as you guys were talking, there's so much I don't understand about how internet, you know, not just the technology, but how all the kind of monetary side and the costing side works, and how all the kind of, you know, if I put a video up and, you know, it's downloaded a million times, you know, who's paying for that and all that kind of stuff. It just all gets very, in my little head, all gets quite complex.
And I guess his main point in his statement was, look, we're just sitting back and letting this all happen, letting it all wash over us for the feeling that we can't do anything about it. But maybe his biggest point is, look, you shouldn't just be sitting down and not making a fuss about any of this. You should be at least paying attention and, you know, moaning about the bits that really are important.
And I think people can, you know, you can, I mean, I guess we've, all three of us have got, you know, a lot of our lives are online now, you know, whether it's Facebook or Runkeepers or whatever. But if you did feel worried about it, you can actually peer it back and delete your content. You know, you could become quite anonymous, but so much of today's society feels like you have to be there, you know, to use some of the apps. You have to be, you know, you have to have a Facebook account or a Google account, even just to log in and try something.
I think we do have to force our MPs and our people that represent, you know, in elections, though, to start taking note of all this, and because, you know, there's plenty of people in the UK government that don't have a clue about any of this and take no interest in it either. And they think it's all sidelines and stuff. But actually, it's such a central part of the day. I think there's, you know, there's a lack of control in, well, rather the people holding the purse strings then will start controlling it in ways that we don't want them to. Anyway.
Well, it's true. I mean, it used to, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, about it used to be governments that held all the data, and now it is the Facebooks and Googles and Amazons that have all the information. You know, they're not just going to give it up. And actually, once you've put your information out there, however much they say, yeah, you can just delete it. I'm not really convinced. I think once it's out there, it's out there, and you don't have any guarantees that anything has been deleted off servers and things that
you have no guarantees. I mean, you take it on trust at some points, and we know that trust's been broken. So yeah. Okay. So talking about our UK government and the internet stuff, they've decided they're going to internet stuff. That's a technical term there. They've decided they're going to pump some more money into the Internet of Things startups. So they're going to pump 46 million into this. And this, as far as I can make out, is smart devices, but smart devices that not like bits of, you know, phone hardware or anything, but it's attaching intelligence to things like water pipes or light switches or energy meters and things like that, that can then sort of talk together and try and help you in your daily life. Yeah. Mm. Does that sum it up, kind of thing? I mean, the examples I've got here are, you know, if a water pipe loses pressure, then it can notify you. So you might know that you need to fix a water pipe. And they're going to do this via kind of really lightweight, energy efficient chips and stuff talking to each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How about a fork that decides you've eaten too many calories, and every time you try and eat something, it flops down and doesn't let anything
go? So I guess, I mean, a lot of the kind of analysts and big tech companies have been saying, you know, Internet of Things is coming, but they've been saying that for probably 3, 4, 5 years. It feels a bit kind of like 3D TV. You know, people constantly telling us this will happen without it actually happening. And I guess drip feed wise, I guess, is getting closer.
Of course it is. Everything, I mean, you know, fridges, you know, they're properly chipped now. So, you know, dishwashers, microwaves, all those things, they are getting there.
Yeah, they've got their own Twitter feeds and everything.
I mean, screw like, me.
You've got some scales that have got its own Twitter.
Every time you jump on the scales, that's an Internet of Things type thing, isn't it? So,
how fat is Ian? You can follow my weight.
So anyway, but they're pumping more money in, which I guess is to be commended. I mean, it doesn't sound like an awful lot of money, but I guess any money is worthwhile. And this is an amalgamation of across several different sort of areas.
Yes. So good to invest in tech. And there does seem to be, I'm always a bit cynical when it's the government actually saying, you know, there's this kind of tech funding, because they do seem to just be throwing money at kind of random, you know, type tech.
Lobbied them the day before. Yeah, you know?
Boris is out today saying London's going to be the centre for tech in the world, and it's like, it's not.
Blah, blah, blah. Scotland's going to be.
Freedom!
Let's not go there. Don't get me started. You're off on a tangent. But, you know, I mean, some of these things are the way it's broken down, I mean, some of these things are going to be quite useful. I mean, you know, we laugh about Ian's digital scales, but tweeting his weight. But actually, digital health is a very interesting area where actually there's a huge amount of money spent on treating illness. In the world, particularly, you know, in the UK. And if we can do stuff to help people monitor their own health and improve that in any way, with, you know, either, you know, Fitbits or whatever the ways that there are a huge number of ways that you can use the internet to kind of help improve the health and monitoring of things with, you know, heart rate monitors or blood sugar monitors, all these kind of things, and it's all uploaded, and you don't really have to think about how you do all that, and all that information is available for research and
for governments to leak accidentally.
Yeah, you know, if it's an aggregate data of things, actually, a lot of aggregate data is actually really very, very useful for research and things, and people being able to make decisions about, you know, how effective even interventions and things are, and actually to try and reduce the costs of health and stuff. That's actually something that's worthwhile.
The government's big buzzword at the moment is preventative healthcare, isn't it? Because that's the only way they can see themselves saving. Being able to offer up healthcare.
I do think there's something there. You know, I've got, you know, the Fitbit. I think the Fitbit's a kind of dumb device, really, you know, when you think about it. But I think it's the first steps of, you know, who knows what Apple and Google are going to bring out with these kind of, you know, wearables and stuff like that. Lots of rumours about it'll track, you know, blood flow and oxygen levels and all sorts of nonsense. And we say nonsense, but, you know, if it can start to predict, you know, maybe how healthy or where things are going. And, you know, a lot of the stuff I do, and it wasn't so much my weight, it was more migraines. I had terrible trouble with migraines. That's what kicked it all off. I felt like even though I'm keeping food diaries, etc., maybe there was more to find out. Maybe the weight loss would help it, or maybe it was a sleeping issue, and that was what triggered the Fitbit more than anything else.
And oftentimes having a central store of information like that can help, you know, researchers in that kind of that investigation. So, yeah, it's been dripping in over. We've been talking, you know, for years now about these little devices, and we get quite excited, like, about a tweeting scale. So I guess it's not the government just chasing after nothing. They've seen this, and they're probably right that they are. Whether we'll get to water pipes, who knows?
Well, you know, and I think there is something to do with actually the low power of these devices and how long you can keep them going and cost as well. So, you know, anything that can be done to kind of drive that down is pretty good. But I think the amount that they're talking really is kind of quite small beer.
Mm.
Yeah. Add-ons for Google Docs. How exciting. We can now, inside of Google Docs, we can add add-ons, and these can add different features. As an example, for Google, the tech, what do they call this? Text editor. Just like the word equivalent in Google Docs. You can add things like thesauruses into now. It's a bit like having the kind of browser apps, but you can have them inside of your Docs.
Are you trying to say dictionary?
Think of other words for thesaurus.
That look up and gives you lots of words and things.
I'd be interested to know what thesaurus words are for thesaurus. Anyway, so yes, so you can now add add-ons. Things like their Excel equivalents, or the spreadsheets, are you need to create new sheets before you can add those add-ons. But that's for you to go and have a look at. I'm sure it's exciting to someone.
I actually think this is a big deal.
Okay, go on then.
And it's just because I think Microsoft have been really slow, you know, getting, you know, things like Word Online. We've talked before about how Word is so bloaty. Mm. And the thing about this is Google is still quite, you know, it's still quite limited in what it can do. And the fact that a lot of these add-ons are, you know, free, or they're actually leveraging, you know, another website. So, you know, mm-hmm. So there's stuff in here from MailChimp, and there's some nice easy workflows in there. There's label merges. It's just some stuff. It's like, see, if I just need to throw something in really quickly, I can just jump in here. And even templates, I thought, this is actually quite a big deal.
MailChimp have plugins everywhere. I don't know who the app developers they got in MailChimp, but they get everywhere, and they get everywhere on day one. It's amazing.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, I get you. I feel it. So actually, it's a way of Google accelerating the development of their software without actually them having to get involved and leaving it a bit more open, saying, we'll give you the shell. Off you go. Yeah.
It's an app store for Docs and Sheets. And
so we could actually see a real massive acceleration in what these things
are. And I still think Docs is one of the kind of the best kind of online tools for just some, you know, nice, cheap, quick collaboration that works. You know, it stores all my edits, so it tracks it all. It's actually really powerful.
And I think we said before, over time, it is now, as a basic word processor and, you know, even layout tool, it's actually getting better and better all the time. Okay, another Google story. So the Drive, their monthly plans for your Drive storage are going down in price. Their basic price is now $1.99, I should say, for 100 gigabytes of storage. So you get the free tier, but then above that, you've got the paid for tiers. $1.99 for 100 gig, $9.99. This is dollars, all in dollars, for a terabyte of data, and $99.99 if you want 10 terabytes of data.
Again, see if you're a small company. And you've got loads of docs. This is
so long as you've got super fast broadband, yeah.
Yeah, but this is bargain time. I mean, some of the there's no point, you know, buying drives at home, and fair enough. There's going to be people out there saying, I'm not giving anything to Google. Google are just going to, you know, take my data, use it, analyze it, do nasty things to it. I don't trust them. I'm going to do something else, and that's fine. But I think all the companies are kind of doing that. I don't see massive evidence that there's, you know, Google are worse than anybody else. And I just think price-wise, I just think that's a bargain.
Well, it's putting massive pressure onto people like Dropbox to offer better value stuff, basically. But yeah, that's probably the cheapest around that we've got at the moment, right?
$2 a month for 100 gig. I mean, see if you're I don't know, a small business or a family or whatever.
Yeah, 100 gigs got to be enough for most people, right? take you nearly that long to upload all that. Okay. Facebook has launched their 15-second auto-playing ads into your stream. Boo.
Boo.
We knew it was coming. I think we mentioned this a while back, but is it actually announced, or have they actually started running these things, rolling it out?
They are starting now. So it's going to be 15-second ads that will autoplay, but you won't hear them unless you actually tap and it expands and you hear them. But don't worry, because they're making sure they're lovely and it's going to be an experience that everybody will want to watch.
Of course it will. Of course it will.
I hate stuff like this.
We knew it was happening. We knew it was going to happen. It's been done. So there we go. It's not like you don't see them everywhere. I mean, on most gaming sites you go to, they have kind of their, you know, video rolling along that you can either choose to listen to or not.
No, I don't. I've got Adblock running. I don't see any of that.
Okay, there you go. Will that work in Facebook?
Interesting no. to find out. Well, it actually does now. So if I go to Facebook just now, it tells me it's blocking. So let me just refresh this. It tells me something horrendous. It says it's blocking only 7 things right now, but the other day it was blocking 42 things. This was all the different ads it was trying to run and all the
You're the reason we've got to watch all these videos, because you block it, so we've got to watch double. You hooligan. Apple. We asked them to release something for our 200th episode, and they listened. And they have they've launched iOS... they released iOS 7.1. Do you want to take us through some of the features of that?
Yeah, it doesn't crash anymore. I don't give a toss. Hey. I don't give a toss about anything else. It just does not do that silly. It's not dashboard. What is it called?
Springboard.
Springboard. I was getting that far too many times for like. The fact is, we had this for like 6 months. It's taken them 6 months to do this. 6 blooming months.
Wow. I was expecting you to leave a list of features, and really, you've just done a splurge of consciousness.
when you think how many people, you think how big a change iOS 7 was, right? And so they're not going to change icons, that's clear. I'm going to have to suffer Safari for the rest of my life.
Someone's down there saying, no, we're sticking with this. We can't be seen to be a U-turn on this. we're going down this route.
Sorry, Sir Johnny. Yeah. But never mind all the little bits and pieces, because the features are like a fairly small beer right now for most people, because CarPlay doesn't exist for anybody.
No, so if you haven't got a car that's got CarPlay, which no one does.
And Toyota, and I can't remember who else have came out today and says, yeah, it'll be 2015 before you see that. So great.
But we're ready.
Yeah. In America first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you an iPhone user, Henry?
It's a long story, and not at the moment is the short answer.
So no.
No. Well, yeah, no, yeah, okay. What I did like, of course, was that the old iPhone 4 gets a performance boost, but it's still not as fast as it was under iOS 6.
Yes. To be honest, that's kind of understandable. If you're running, you know, trying to run new software on old hardware, you're going to get that problem. Siri is now...
I have to interject, because somebody sent me a funny today, which was a screen grab from one of these crazy American programs. They do Did You Know Facts, and it was a cricket game, and the Did You Know Fact was, whenever India and Pakistan have faced each other, Pakistan have always won the game when India lost. and that's like Henry just telling us that he's
it's
not
a long
used,
story.
It's a long story, and at the moment, no.
Okay, so Siri is, you can now manually control Siri when Siri listens to you. It's got a better voice.
Well, better's debatable.
Okay, I haven't heard it, so I'll let you debate that. iTunes Radio has been released now, so you can, if you're subscribed to iTunes Match, you can listen to our ad-free radio streaming.
No, that was already available. Australia and America.
Right.
So for some reason, the Australians, Poms, whatever they're called.
We're the Poms.
Oh, we're the Poms.
No, you're the Poms.
They're the...
Yeah. It's only the English that are the Poms, yes. Is it not? Anyway.
And they're the turds, which is where you get Poms the turds from.
So no, I think this is just like they've made it easier to buy music when you're listening to it for free.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so you okay? So the feature that they've added is the actual bit where you want to buy it. Yeah. Fantastic. Calendar. You got a monthly view. What else? Accessibility. They've added a bold font. Woohoo!
Well, there's actually a couple of key points in there. Reduced motion. Some people are getting motion sick with all the whoopie-doo animation. The woo. And they've actually got a thing where it says turn on button shapes, and it turns on the buttons that they removed with iOS 7. So this is the basically
okay.
So see all the bits where
I
they've
quite
said,
like that.
Yeah. So see, and that's why because you would be like, oh, they've added a bold font, whoopee. So see all the bits where it's like they don't want to reverse what they've done.
But this is a way of getting it back in.
Go to accessibility, and you can basically turn all the old things back on. Like, oh, I like a button. Oh, look, there's buttons. Ooh.
Well, actually, so you know that you can press something. Simple things like that. Right, okay. Yeah. You can have new camera setting to automatically enable HDR.
That's good.
iCloud keychain support for additional countries, so where they didn't have them before.
Australia.
Can I be asked, is there anything else important in this list? No, not really.
Yes, fixes a bug that could occasionally cause a home screen crash.
Could occasionally.
It does feel a lot snappier. You know, it just certainly, there was certainly, whether it's just, there was just some of the animation times, because I think there was a lot of complaints that some
even
of the,
even a quarter, you know, a quarter quicker would make your life a lot better, wouldn't it? So
it's just, you notice it all the time. And the first time you see one of these animations, you think, that's nice. And then the 100th time, you're like, why is this so slow?
Come
it's just an animation.
Come on. Yeah. Okay, never too far behind Apple announcements. Samsung has announced its music service, music streaming, like, you know, radio type service. And they called it Milk Music. Is that right? Have they really called it that?
Yeah. Milk Music.
Right. Okay. And this is only for Galaxy smartphones, which I think we've seen from BlackBerry Messenger, that's not the way forward. But they're currently keeping it to Galaxy smartphones and just saying, well, we've got enough of them, so we've got enough people, and we reckon there's space for us in this world.
Yes, I think it's free at the moment.
If they've called it milk music, I think you know, keeping it just on the Galaxy phones is probably, you know, one range of phones too many, but you know, maybe that's just me.
Should be on the dairy phones. Dairy milk. Nah, that's really, really, really poor. Cut that one. fabulous. Right, let's get on to the next one. New look iPlayer. Yes, another one for 200, episode 200. The BBC knew that we were going to be talking about them again.
You do know as I had to scrape the barrel to like just get some new things in here.
Yeah, so they released it the other day. You can actually have it now on your iPlayer. It's a new responsive design, basically. They've also put suggestions up. One of the interesting things that came out of this was their kind of research said that people don't go to iPlayer anymore just to sort of catch up. They go to actually be presented with options, a bit more like the kind of Netflix idea of, you know, you're not just necessarily going there because you know what you want to listen to or watch. You're going there because you want to have things suggested up. And I think that comes out of it being delivered now to all these different boxes and actual smart TVs and things. People are using it as their programming guide.
I'm quite surprised at that, really, because the number of adverts that you get on any BBC channel that you watch or listen to now for all the items that the BBC put out, it's amazing that anybody would not know what the BBC was putting on. But again, maybe that's just me being a bit cynical.
Definitely. Where the BBC is concerned, you should never be cynical. I've completely forgotten what my point was. Anyway, no sign of the 30-day... They said that instead of it being a 7-day catch-up, where they're going to go to a 30-day catch-up, but that's obviously still not been released yet.
And I think part of the changes are going to be, you know, so let's present more content and get that change done first, and then there'll be the 30-day window, no doubt, and then they've also talked about this year there's going to be a store where you can buy, you know...
Things to keep.
Yeah. So I think it was kind of... I think everybody knew something had to change in the way it was kind of presenting at the moment. Yeah. But still,
and with BBC Three being shut down and turned into a digital only channel, that this is kind of them saying, look, you know, we're not forgetting about BBC Three. This is an important step for that channel. They're trying to sort of roll it out. They've obviously had a lot of signatures this week saying, we please save BBC Three. But there we go. Probably not enough to save them. And finally, this week, Sony and Panasonic have got together and decided what the next equivalent, the equivalent successor to Blu-ray is going to be. Have they given it a name?
Yeah, the archival disc is the actual name.
Is that actually it? So it's not just an archival disc to replace the Blu-ray player. They've called it the archival disc in that.
The archival disc.
I think they've probably realised that no longer are they going to be selling entertainment on these discs then if they haven't got a catchy user-focused name. I think they've kind of suggested that this is just for big companies to store data in long-term storage.
That was really the only reason I put it in, because it's going to be 1 terabyte, and even sort of 4 or 5 years ago, if there's, you know, people were talking about what's going to be a successor to Blu-ray, and I don't think there's going to be one. It is going to be cloud storage. Yeah. And I guess this is just companies, because what they were talking around is that for a lot of companies, it's getting really expensive storage again, and things like these archival discs are going to be required.
Well, Amazon came up with their Glacier, I think it's Amazon Glacier or something, which is their long-term storage solution. But if you can have local copies of your, you know, massive amounts of data on these discs, I mean, they're starting off with 300 gigabyte discs. They reckon over time that's going to get to 500 gigabytes, then a terabyte. I mean, terabyte per disc. It's an awful lot of data.
Yep. And I mean, the example in the story was Facebook has begun installation of 10,000 Blu-ray discs in a prototype storage cabinet. And this was for backups, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Are these rewritable?
Are these things rewritable?
If it's a successor to Blu-ray, then there would at least be a rewritable option. But the thing is, if it is going to be mainly company use, there's less use for rewritable versions. If you really are just archiving off data, we'll see. And that is the end of the news. But for our 200th episode, Ian has rolled out 2 picks for us.
The first pick is Todoist.
Chess.
No. No. In the 200 episodes, I think that competes with your duplicate one as low points. low points.
My duplicate pick and my imaginary April Fool joke.
Yeah.
That was very good.
Forgot about that one. But yeah. So Todoist. I've used OmniFocus and Remember the Milk and a whole lot of different other to-do apps.
Used them all.
Yeah, and I got annoyed. iOS 7 came out, and see with things like Fantastical, which would show you reminders alongside your calendar, I thought, like, I need to use reminders and just keep it simple. OmniFocus was just too slow and too much for me. But then, as usual, I was let down by iCloud not syncing properly. So 3 or 4 times my reminders got out of sync, and I would either have to, you know, add them in multiple places or check them off in multiple places. And there was just one weekend I was like, right, gone. That's I'm having to stop using that. And I picked up Todoist, and it's been really good. So that's come up for a month now. So it's free to use. It's available on 13 platforms. You know, so wherever you are, including a web version, you can get to it. The sync works, you know, so I just can't, you know, and it works really quickly, because sometimes iCloud one, as I would check off on a particular task, you know, it could be, you know, a few minutes before it would then update somewhere else. This is like updating everywhere. After about a week, I signed up for the premium version, which gives you then reminders, notes, and labels filters for $29 a year.
Does something like Evernote not do similar thing? You know,
it does, but not to the kind of level I want to do. So even the Evernote interface is just a bit too clunky.
Because it's not just a to-do list.
If I look at it, I mean, I don't think I'm big on my to-do list, but I'm rattling through about 40 tasks a week now. Mm-hmm. That I'm just kind of like, and it's when I'm at work and somebody reminds me, oh, better do that. I just, you know, iPhone, add, and it's there, and I know it's there, and it's a lot easier than Evernote for me. I use Evernote as a kind of bit of a storage dump, and I just use this purely for reminders and all that kind of good stuff, and a little bit of kind of get things done. You know, I like my little filters and pulling out contexts.
Well, so it's good to know that you'll be happy for the next 2 weeks.
No, I've been happy for a month, which is far longer than, and it's working really well. Touch some wood.
So Todoist, go and have a look at todoist.com.
And my second pick is Smash Hit. So this is a free game for iOS and Android. I find it quite addictive. That's why I was ignoring you last week when we started doing the podcast. So it's a kind of almost like a kind of first person shooter on rails. You see kind of glass objects and you need to smash it with balls. And it looks lovely. The sounds are lovely. It's free, and it's not, and although it's an in-app purchase to go premium, it's not like to buy extra balls or anything. It's just if you can play it for free, or if you want to start from your respawn points, or if you want to cloud sync, then pay $149 to go premium. So it's actually quite a kind of elegant in-app purchase.
A sensible one. So it's almost like a completely scuppered full version, but it's kind of a demo plus, and then if you want the real thing, go for $149, which isn't not too bad.
iOS and Android, and it is really, really nice.
That's the future of in-app, that is.
I just think there's something about it. There's so many good games out there, and they're just totally displaced by, all the rubbish.
Mm. Good stuff. So unless, Henry, have you got any pick for us?
I do not.
Excellent. Nor do I. So that is the end of the 200th episode. And you can, as ever, find out more about what we do at digitaloutbox.com. And you can talk to us, info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're on Twitter, Digital Outbox, as well as Skype, Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK. And Ian, where are you?
I'm on Twitter as Sweeper, and my blog is iand.net.
And Henry, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter as TalkRhubarb, and I've also got a running blog, talkrhubarb.com/blog.
Excellent. So thanks very much for listening. If you listened to every single one of the 200 episodes, then good for you as well. We will talk to you next week for the 201st episode, and the fanfares won't be there anymore. Speak to you then. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Why have we got satellite delay to Henry?
I don't know.
I don't know why we've got satellite delay.
Your face disappeared, and then suddenly there was a massive gap.
There's an 8-second lag.
8 seconds.
Yeah, it was pretty extreme at the end.
Right, turn my it's getting
better.
So your video's gone again. So I think we're going to have another delay now.
Yeah, it was a bit. Yeah, but no, it's all right. I switched it off.
Oh, right. Okay.
No, no, we are.
I'm lost.
Gentlemen, it's been emotional.
It has been extremely emotional.
I must admit that the kind of French didgeridoo wins you a prize. I feel I should send you a deep fried Mars bar or something.
That definitely does. That's very good.
When letters cross in the post, I think I might have to go and eat something.
I feel like I've just sent a pigeon to Henry from the north of Glasgow to the south of Glasgow to send these messages.